Welcome to TA1. Everything you wanted to know about adventure racing and then some. And we have another then some episode. We're going to go sort of learn the difference between paddling and rowing. And there is a difference. You probably all know that. Anyway, home for a few days between road trip to Indiana. Sunday, picked up the new van, drove it home. Picked it up Monday, drove it home Monday, Tuesday. Was able to stop in Indianapolis at the 500 and go through the museum and actually see a couple of IndyCar tests. So that was a nice little bonus. And then I leave on Tuesday to Road America. We're going to go unveil the new Flying Ghost Racing Team cars and a weekend of endurance racing. So that's my next couple of weeks. Shout out to everybody that's in Africa for Expedition Africa. Looks like everyone's having a good time getting ready. I think the race, start sometime. Not exactly sure when. So, so that's coming up. That's it. Let's get this show on the road with Team Oracle. So remember, slow is fast, fast is good, take a few chances. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Hi there.
Are you Janice?
I am indeed.
Yeah, I can tell because it says so on the screen.
I'm just waiting for Ian. He's coming. I'm not sure where. So you must see Randy.
I am. How are you? Nice to meet you.
Good, thanks. Nice to meet you too.
We can start because you can tell me all about you before he gets here if you want.
Sure. What would you like to know?
Well, who are you?
I'm Janice Mason. I'm with Team Oracle and have been in the Race to Alaska a few times with Ian, and I also did it with Sistership in 2016. I live in Victoria. I don't know if that's useful.
Doesn't hurt. Doesn't hurt that you're one of those polite Canadians, right?
Yeah. Well, and also it's also kind of nice for the race because the first leg takes us to Victoria, and then we get to go home and sleep in our own bed and figure out what we need to do for the rest of the race.
Well, yeah. Well, that's, yeah. I had one adventure race that I covered that was literally in my backyard, like a checkpoint 400 meters from my house. So it's like, wow, I got to sleep 3 hours in my own bed once in a race. It's pretty nice, even though you don't get much sleep. But
So whereabouts are you?
I'm in Western South Dakota,
okay.
Black Hills of South Dakota. So I always tell people Mount Rushmore. A lot of people know where that is. So that's about a 25-minute drive for me. So we're literally out in the middle of the woods.
Oh, nice. Unfortunately, I'm in a little bit of a noisy neighborhood. Lots of kids right now because they're on spring break and not too far from the highway going up Island. So it gets a bit noisy sometimes. And I miss the coast. Like, so when we go on our trips up the coast, it's just such a nice break to get away from the city.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny with us, it's almost different. It's almost like I take my little dog for a walk in town, and it's almost a treat for her because she gets other dog smells instead of the, critters. So it's a big change for us. So
you're doing podcasts for what, you have a regular program or what is it?
Yeah, so normally I've been doing it for, I think this is my sixth year. So mostly it's adventure racing, which is, can be paddling, biking, running, all map and compass. But I also like adventure, air quotes, things. And so I had a couple of friends of mine, adventure racers, really good racers that did the, what's the one around the Puget Sound, that race?
Washington 360.
That one, yep. So I talked to them with that, and then I thought, well, I need to talk to Daniel. So I had Daniel on the podcast maybe a year ago. And then with the race to Alaska coming up, I thought, well, I'll talk to him again. And then I thought, well, let's get some of the teams, because that's a very unique race. And I've talked to every adventure racer in the world at least once. So we're getting some more new blood in here. And the race just fascinates me. Oops.
Yeah. It's a pretty cool event. I've done it, well, like I say, Dean and I have done it a few times together. And I've also done the Yukon River Quest. And I love that one. I've done it twice, and I'd go back in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I did an episode. I recorded it last night with a friend of mine, Jennifer Franska, who's done the Yukon at least once or twice. He's a paddler. And I'm really getting into this paddling thing, which everybody who knows me thinks is hilarious because I'm not a water person.
Oh, okay.
My wife loves it. She loves the water, swimming, paddling, everything. But me, it's like, no thanks. Unless I'm covering, if I'm shooting or something, then it's like, yeah, put me in the water. So, so that's where this kind of a little series of podcasts. We'll do, three or four teams, hopefully, and let people know that there are people crazier than adventure racers, and that would be Race to Alaska-ers. So you must be Ian.
Yeah, this is Ian.
Yeah. Hi there. Sorry, I'm a little late there.
Not a problem.
It's actually a par for the course. Ian is known for being late.
Janice is the morning person as well. So
it's yeah, it's
fine. That's the only reason. That's the only reason we finish.
It's 5 o'clock in the morning.
Okay. I'm not ignoring you. If I look over here, I have another computer up, so I can actually maybe ask questions that actually looks like I did some research on you, which I never do. But so rumor has it your first date was Race to Alaska. Is that true?
It's a nice story, and we're not going to dispel that myth.
Okay.
I remember thinking of it as a retirement planning. So Ian and I met through the Race to Alaska in 2016. We actually met on the dock 2 days before the race started in 2016. He was on Team Fly and I was on Sistership. And our respective captains kind of said, go check out the competition, because we were on the same kind of boat, F-27s. Mm-hmm. And so then after the race, we kind of regrouped, and because Ian's crew took off and was way ahead of us. But we both live in Victoria, so we thought we'd just hook up and go for a drink and share stories. And anyway, sort of led to, hey, why don't we row? I really wanted to row.
Yeah, my slightly modified version is that we got together for a drink, and Janice isn't really doesn't have a sailing background. I've got more of a sailing background. Mm-hmm. And so I was really interested, like, how did it go? Like, how did you enjoy yourself? Because she was on a sailboat, right? And she said, yeah, it was pretty good. But, I really want to row the race, and I can't find anybody to row it with me. And so, I volunteered, and then that sort of cascaded into a whole train of events, finding the boat and refitting the boat and then training. And I'm not... I have rowed before, but nothing like Janice. So, had to get me trained as well.
So you just really wanted to row it. So it wasn't, you got to do it on the sailboat. That was enough. So you weren't going to go sail it with him. You decided you needed to row it.
Yeah. Well, I first heard about the race in 2015 before the first one, but I couldn't find anyone in Victoria who I knew as a rower who was willing to do it. Everyone was like, oh, that sounds really cool, but hey, no thanks. And so I ended up watching and following the race in 2015 and just lucked out and got into sistership. I didn't know the crew, but they were looking for somebody, and a friend of mine directed me to their Facebook page or something, and I connected with them and eventually got on that crew. And yeah, it was a great trip, but it's tough work rowing a 3,000 pound F27. And we had to row a lot. It was pretty calm a lot of the time that year. And so I thought, yeah, I'd love to do it again, but I want to row it.
In a proper rowboat.
Yeah.
And when you say rowboat, that's a rowboat where you're sitting and you're looking backwards, right?
Yep. So we had
how do you do that for, what was it, 17 days, 18 days?
Well, 21 days of rowing.
21 actually. Days?
Well, it helps to have mirrors, which we didn't. And it was pretty stressful. And at one point I got fed up. I was in the bow. And so I had the pleasure of steering and looking out for obstacles and unfortunately running into a few things on occasion. And we got halfway and I was just like, nah, there's no way I can do this anymore. Ian has to go in the bow and I'll stroke. But we took a bit of a mental health day. And after that, I was like, okay, I can do this. But yeah, it was constantly every 10 strokes or so looking over my shoulder.
Yeah, that's sounds pretty horrible, actually. Sorry. So don't mind me laughing at this because I find it amazing, but also really funny.
Well, in some ways, it did feel horrible. Like the first week, I don't think we trained enough because we were both working full time. We were trying to get our boat ready, and it was hard to fit the training in as well. And the first week, rowing 8 to 9 hours a day is pretty hard on the body. Yeah. But after that first week of feeling terrible, we started to feel better. Well, at least I did. I felt terrible. I'm not sure about Ian. But after that first week, things started to improve. And by the end of it, felt pretty strong.
Is rowing that far, let's say basically untrained, but obviously you have the muscle memory, right, from rowing your whole life. My analogy always is people, the cyclists that race the Tour de France say after doing that once, they're like, their body changes and cycling becomes easier. Does your body change and does rowing become easier after paddling for 21 days? Rowing for 21 days?
Definitely. I think it's really important to be active, and we spend so much, at least I have spent so much time sitting with my job, and just getting out there rowing every day, it really strengthens the muscles, the body, and yes, you adapt. And as long as you balance it and don't sort of push too hard, like rowing all day long is like going for a long walk. It's not like the rowing training I used to do when I was training for the national team, where we'd go out and row really hard for an hour and a half. And you have to change your mindset and go, okay, this is like going for a walk. So it's just nice, relaxed movement.
With a big pack on.
Well, yeah.
Oh, you definitely sort of get, I mean, again, I don't have the same sort of rowing background, but yeah, I mean, after you pick the sport up, I mean, it's such a great sport, working so many muscles that you just get into the zone, and you can just focus on each stroke for 10 hours and it's a really great sport.
So a technical question first. So when you're rowing, is that with like a fixed seat or with a sliding seat?
A sliding seat.
Okay. So you're really using your whole body.
Yeah. And that, the two parts of my body that suffered the most by the end were my hands. And they get blistered and then calloused. And then we were wearing gloves and Vaseline underneath the gloves, which was great. It really helped a lot. But then it would rain. And so everything would just be soggy. And then the skin would start to peel. But overall, it wasn't too bad. But our butts got really sore. And we think it's because we were losing weight and we were constantly using those muscles and sitting on them all day long. And so they got a bit ischemic. And at the end, we had to stop every 15 to 20 minutes and actually take a break, stand up in the boat, lie down, do some stretching, because it got too painful. And it wasn't because they were there weren't open sores or anything. It was just the muscles were screaming, we need more oxygen.
It was great fun. I totally understand you guys were having probably the best time of your life, and I agree it probably was, but it's still, you know, anytime I talk to anybody that does things like that, it's like, hey, I mean, I get it. I was a 24-hour mountain bike racer, so I understand the sore butt part. So we get that point. So the first year, I mean, did you guys have a lot to talk about that first year? Because you know, we're getting to know each other. How much did you talk then? Conversation during the day, as opposed to, like, say, you know, you might this year.
No, we don't actually talk a lot in the boat. Okay. It's you know, we do a bit. It sort of depends, but it's hard because in the rowboat, I was in the bow, so I'm like directed towards Ian, but he's facing away from me, and so if he wants to talk to me so that I can hear, he'd have to like keep turning and talking over his shoulder. And the same when we were kayaking the next year, it's just a bit hard to hear.
With all the water movement and the wind and the rain and the breaking waves and stuff. You don't really have much of a conversation. There's a lot of what.
It's not paddling around on Golden Pond having a nice little conversation.
No. But there's always lots to talk about.
Yeah. I agree with that. So you did the rowing 1 year, and then you went to the kayak. Why?
When Jake Beattie, who's sort of the founder of the race, Northwest Maritime Center, kind of came up with the idea, the original sort of tagline was row, sail, paddle, you know?
Yeah.
So he was trying to create this race that would bring in, you know, a lot of little boats, sailboats, rowboats, and some kayakers. And so, you know, I've sailed it a couple of times, then we'd rowed it, and we just thought, oh, well, you know, we should really do the paddling now. And I think with the rowing, I mean, it was a great experience. Just trying something different. We're actually both paddlers as well. So it wasn't a big jump. And the idea of kind of looking forward instead of backwards appealed to us as well.
And it's also a lot easier on the body. I mean, we're not as fast when we're kayaking, but we can paddle for longer periods of time without stopping. So that was one of the nice things as well. It was a bit easier.
Is that because you don't have to use your legs and you're just using your core?
You're not using the big muscles in your legs as much. I mean, you are a little bit, but not as much oxygen demand. And so you're just not putting out the same kind of watts for. So we found, as Janice says, you're actually moving a little slower. Maybe a nautical mile per hour slower than the rowing, but you can sustain it. We found we could sustain it for quite a bit longer, just because you're not getting as tired. So
yeah. So I mean, how many hours a day would you paddle then?
Well, our longest day was 16 hours of paddling. But we would probably paddle 10 to 12 hours a day as opposed to 8 or 9 with the rowing.
We'd
go to shore every night. I guess if we were really trying to play the currents and the conditions optimally, we would have been doing more paddling at night, but we tended to like to sleep at night.
Well, and something about being out on the big water at night, I don't know. Seems like it'd be friendlier in the daylight to me.
Yeah. Well, and the one good thing about, you know, that part of the country, right? In June, that's right near the summer solstice. So you're actually getting maximum daylight hours. So it's really only like you know, maybe 3 or 4 hours where it's really dark.
Yeah. So when you're paddling, how far out are you? Or are you relatively close to, you know, land, or do you get out in the middle of, you know?
It depends.
Are you out in the middle of the ocean?
Yeah. Actually, it's a really good question. I mean, again, the route is, it's called the Inside Passage, and so there's sections of it. You know, it's between a big chunk of it is between Vancouver Island and the mainland. So there's lots of, you know, fairly narrow channels, lots of currents. There's times where you're actually just paddling, you know, like 6-10 feet from shore, trying to work the eddies a little bit. And then there's an exposed section, Queen Charlotte Sound, where you're really in the open kind of Pacific, and it's quite a rock pile. So you get swells and reflected waves off of the rock, very rocky shoreline, and wind waves on top of that. And so sometimes you want to be a couple miles offshore because again, with these mainland inlets and the tides, you get these big standing waves. So sometimes it's actually safer to be, you know, a few miles out offshore. And there are a few, you know, a couple of big crossings that you need to, you know, make sure you have a good weather window.
Probably the biggest crossing is the one from Port Townsend to Victoria. It's about 36 nautical miles. And when you're out in the middle, you're probably close to, I don't know, 20 miles from shore.
Yeah,
15, either way. 20. It's kind of, you do a diagonal and then up the north end of Vancouver Island going across toward Cape Cosh. And in the rowboat, we took the route that was fairly close to shore, but in the kayak, we just kind of made a beeline from Port Hardy across to just south of Cape Cosh, which I think was about 32 nautical miles. I mean, there's some islands along the way, but for a good chunk of it, definitely 3-4 miles offshore anyway.
So Ian, you've got a sailing background, so you're probably kind of used to that, but Janice, yeah, with your rowing, were you used to that kind of big water?
No. definitely not. I used to spend some time rowing around in the Gulf Islands, but I would never be more than a mile or two offshore. So yeah, it definitely was a different experience. But, you know, we had to go to shore pretty much every night because, yeah, I find it really hard to pee when I'm in the kayak. In our rowboat, it was actually really good. We could stand up and we were quite mobile. It's quite different in the kayak. So that's, yeah, another limiting factor. And I didn't quite learn how to pee effectively in my kayak without getting it all over the place. So
yeah, no,
that's one of those things you don't really think about.
Well, quite honestly, adventure racers think about all that stuff. So they would be wondering, how do you do that? Yeah, it's just, it's awkward and go to shore when you have to, right?
Yeah, when I did the Yukon River Quest, I practiced. I would go out to Elk Lake when it was really calm, and I figured out a way of scooching myself forward enough that I could actually pee while I was in my kayak. But once I got onto moving water in the Yukon, I couldn't. And I had to go to shore, but as soon as I got to shore, I'd be able to pee, no problem.
Well, I mean, quite honestly, it's probably a nice little break once in a while just to get out, you know, as long as you don't take 15 minutes to do it every time.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
So what, Janice, I mean, what was your background? How did you start paddling and rowing?
Well, started rowing back when I was in university, and that was a step up from swimming. I swam as a kid competitively, and then I met this woman who was a rower, and I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. So I took up rowing, and I rode in the skinny racing shells with the university and the national team. Went to the World Championships, the Olympics, went to Royal Henley in England, met Princess Grace of Monaco. And then I got involved in a kayak business for a while, so learned how to paddle as well. Lived in the Gulf Islands, did some rowing there, paddling. And I don't know, a couple of friends introduced me to adventure racing in paddling with the Yukon River Quest. So that was in 2010 when I first did that. And then again in 2012. And I guess as I was getting a little older and my daughter was getting older and more independent, it was like, well, what can I do to have some adventures? And then somehow heard about the Race to Alaska and I got hooked.
What was your, when you, well, the first time you heard about it, how long did it take you to think you wanted to do it?
Not very long. Like, I think, I don't know, there's something, well, I remember as a kid wanting to swim around Vancouver Island. So I think I'd had these ideas of doing long things for a long time. And it just, this presented itself as a really great opportunity because paddling up the coast had been something I'd thought about, but never done. I, you know, paddled a fair bit around Vancouver Island, like not all the way around, but in various locations. But yeah, one of those ideas of going up the coast was always in the back of my mind, I think.
Cool.
And the thing about the race is it's got lots of, there's lots of energy and enthusiasm and people are watching you. I mean, and you kind of go, well, why am I paying money to do this thing when I could just do it on my own? But there's something alluring about, you know, we're not going to win as a kayaker or a rowing team. We're not going to win unless there's absolutely no win for the entire 2 weeks. But it's just that whole community and it kind of grabs hold of you and sucks you in. And the coastline is so amazing as well.
Yeah. That's a very good point. You could just do this, but is it more fun that it's a quote unquote competition?
I think it's more fun because there's lots of people supporting and, you know, things happen along the way and you can share your adventures and misadventures with people. And yeah, we get lots of support from family, friends, coworkers.
Yeah. There is that added challenge, right? I mean, there's every year there's, I expect there's probably a couple of dozen paddlers, you know, that do that route or even further up into Alaska.
Yeah.
And we've often thought, yeah, we really need to take like 2 or 3 months and do this. I think there's just something about the deadline and the that additional challenge of having that deadline, and you got to push, and you don't. It's not like you're going to cut corners safety wise, but you just you really have to. You just have to really pay attention to the weather and your route plan, kind of leapfrog fit. Yeah. Find your way in a short duration.
Yeah. I don't know if I would ever paddle Wanda Fuca Strait if it weren't for the race. Like there's nothing really appealing about that other than the challenge and the, you know, sense of accomplishment. Cause you get out there and it's just, there's just water and tide, rip tides, and it's crazy weather. And I mean, when we did the rowboat in 2017, that was rather dicey, and we ended up making it safely across, and then an hour later the wind kicked up and there were 40 knot winds and 9 Coast Guard rescues. And so you sort of have those experiences that you can kind of go, yeah, we did that, but I probably wouldn't have done it if it wasn't for the race.
Well, you probably wouldn't do it again if it wasn't a race. You might have done it once to say you did it, right? But yeah, one time is enough for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Ian, you have a sailing background. Where did that come from?
Well, just growing up, my father was a really keen sailor, and so, you know, weekend racing and cruising in the summer. And yeah, I hadn't really done a whole lot from in my 20s, 30s, and 40s, but then just a buddy of mine kind of got me back interested in sailing, and then actually he and I both found out about the race, and he had the perfect sailboat for it. So that's sort of how I got involved in the race, just originally helping this friend of mine refit his boat, and then we did it the first year, And then a buddy of mine, another friend of a friend, heard that I'd done it and said, well, I need crew in 2016. I need crew. So I did it again before I met Janice. But yeah, mostly just growing up, sailing was something that we did a lot of as a family. And didn't get to Alaska, but a lot of the Vancouver Island sections of the race, sort of familiar with those.
So have you done every edition?
Well, I've started it. You know, we didn't, Janice might've told you in 2019, we entered again, but we didn't finish the stage one. We were about a half an hour late.
No, we finished it. We just didn't finish it in time.
Yeah, we missed the cutoff time by about a half an hour. So,
that was a good story.
That's a good story. I think you need to tell it.
Yeah.
So it was super, super windy. Well, and we decided when we left Port Townsend that we're not going to make it to Victoria that first day. So you have 36 hours to get across from Port Townsend to Victoria. And on a good day, we did it in seven and a half hours in the rowboat and in 2018 in the kayak. So we knew we could do it, but the wind was just not good. So we knew we weren't going to make it. So we went to Dungeness Spit along with quite a few other small boats and hung out for the night, a gorgeous spot. Like I'd never been there before and it was a really neat experience. And then the next day the wind had lessened a bit. It was still quite windy. And we just left it a little bit too late. We underestimated our ability, overestimated our ability.
Yeah. So we landed at instead of going into Victoria Harbor, we knew we were running out of time, so we landed at the Victoria Golf Club, which is right on the shoreline, pretty much almost directly sort of north of the Dungeness Spit, and then we looked at the time and we thought, well, you know, maybe we can portage. We had a set of wheels. And we thought, yeah, we might just be able to make it. So we strapped the wheels onto the kayak, and then I'm dragging the thing down the street, and then Janice is trying to clear us through customs, right? Because they're asking some questions like, well, what port did you land at? I just kind of ran out of steam.
It was kind of funny too, because we got to this little beach and we realized it was going to take us too long to, we would have to sort of paddle past Victoria and then into around the breakwater. And we threw our stuff up just above this little bank and poked our heads up. And there were these guys coming into, I think it was a green, and we poked our heads up and said something. And they said, oh, safety first, because they could see how windy it was. And they didn't mind us hauling our kayak up onto their golf course, and we had to kind of drag it along the edge of the course until we could get to the road. And you know, because we're both in Victoria, we sort of knew a good route, but if we hadn't had the boat, we definitely could have made it. It was about, I think, 5 kilometers, and we just ran out of time. So we got to the finish line, and there's no bell. Like, they must have taken the finish line bell and everything away as soon as, what was it, 5 o'clock we had to be there?
5:30, I think. Or maybe
it was five. I think we got there at 5:30, and it was just like deserted.
Yeah, that sounds like something Daniel would do. Yep, that's it's 5:01. Take the bell away.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's kind of suck. What do you do? What do you do then? Like, you know, you've got this big adventure planned, and so did you just go on another adventure? Tell me you did.
We did, but we didn't. Like, some people said, well, why don't you just do the race anyway? And it's kind of like, well, we didn't have anything really to prove because we had already done it. But and it's just not the same if you're not part of the race. So we went up and did a canoeing trip and went to Valdez Island, did some more paddling. So just relaxed a bit.
Yeah. So, well, you made the best of it.
Yeah. I mean, it was disappointing, but. You know, like, that's what happens, and you have
to
deal with it and move on. And It was sort of funny though, because there were a lot of people that were quite upset with the race boss for not letting us go on. And then, you know, we were like, well, you can't make exceptions. You know, there's certain criteria, and yeah, we've gotten across Juan de Fuca before, but we didn't do it this year. So
yeah.
Luck.
There is that part. So yeah. And I mean, yeah. If you let somebody that's 30 minutes late, then next time it's 31 minutes, right? And then why have a cutoff?
Yeah. And there was one crew that had, as they got into the Victoria Harbor, I guess they got swamped or something happened, and they had to like right their boat and get all their gear back, and they made it like about 15 minutes before the cutoff time. So it really would have taken away from that, because that was, you know, that was pretty epic, because they had to deal with all those challenges and they still made it. So
yeah. So how do you train for paddling for 19 days?
Well, if you were me, you'd have a nice training program. We've been doing lots of swimming, just generally staying fit. And I had a hip replacement last July, so actually haven't done any kayaking until this past weekend. So it's just been, you know, just generally staying fit. And as we get closer, we spend more time in the boat, and we'll head out for a few days to get used to camping again and dealing with all those things to make sure we haven't forgotten anything.
Yeah. How much of the race is, you know, mental, and how much is the physical part for you guys?
Yeah, it's a good question, actually. I would say it's the balance is probably a little different, the rowing versus paddling. Physically, I would, for me anyway, it was more demanding. Mm-hmm. We had a little incident there, you know, like just a couple of times where you've rowed like 35 nautical miles and you're just soaking wet and you're not eating enough, and you kind of have those hangry moments and why am I doing this? But no, I would say for the most part, like, you know, we were pretty positive for the duration of the race. Physically, it's really all in the training, and always a challenge is sort of putting in those big mile days in preparation for the race. So, you know, we had a few in the first week, some physical, you know, a few physical challenges, sore muscles and that, but you gotta be prepared. It's getting to the start line, right? Almost like any kind of endurance race. It's really putting the time in beforehand.
Yeah. I think on the route, it's also just, you know, how committed a person is to doing it. I don't like to give up, so it makes it easier to keep going. And, you know, it's really hard, but once you get through that, it's like, well, okay, it's that sense of accomplishment. And and in 2018 in the kayak, we actually struggled with some wrist and shoulder problems for the first half. And we got to a point where it was kind of like, can we really keep going? And we got to Port Hardy and had a hard time finding a decent place to camp. Every beach seemed to have a bear walking along it. And we finally found this beach by the airport, and the tent leaked all night, and we got up in the morning, and it was this massive portage to get our boat down to the water. And it was just a wet day. And I was like, oh, I don't think I can do this. But we got in the boat and we paddled over to this place called Wilkie Point, and beautiful sunshine. And it was like, okay. And that just was the turning point. But it had been a little bit depressing. We'd had some really challenging winds to fight against all through Johnson Strait. So.
Yeah, and Randy, you know, you probably experienced this well, right? As well with mountain biking, is you're traveling through some of the most incredible landscapes, right? And those landscapes they almost like generate all this energy that mm-hmm. you're able to somehow mobilize. So I don't know. I found that just really invigorating, and you derive a lot of energy just from the trip itself.
Yeah, well, it's definitely better than sitting at home, right?
yeah.
So my wife, who's also, you know, like crazy nuts, he racers, does this stuff. Her mantra is when she's hurting is like, am I going to die from this? She's like, no, I don't think so. Okay, I'll keep going. So
yeah, and it's sort of like once we get halfway up, like Bella is kind of the gateway into a land where there's far fewer people and just everything is cleaner and greener and bigger and wilder. And once we get up there, it just kind of changes, I think, one's mindset too. And it does take a while. I find it takes a while to get away from the stress and the hustle and bustle and noise of the city. Like the first paddling part up to Campbell River is still pretty populated. Like all day long, we're seeing houses and people along the shore. And then past Campbell River, it's much more remote. But then beyond Bella Bella, it's where it really gets to that kind of magical, mystical kind of environment.
Yeah. You're really feeling like you're the only people in the world when you get up there.
Mm-hmm.
What point do you have to get to in a race where you start thinking, we are going to do this year. Finish this. I mean, how long does it take before you get that feeling?
I don't know. I think once we started and really got going, and on the two that we finished, it was hard not to say we were going to finish. I mean, we got to Bella Bella in the rowboat, and we had this chat with Daniel Evans, the race boss, and he was kind of saying, well, you know, you don't have much time to get there before the sweep boat. And we're like, oh no, we can do it. And so that was probably a little bit of a, okay, we kind of have to push ourselves here, because if we don't, we might not get there in time.
Yeah.
But I think after missing the first stage cutoff in 2019, as long as we get to Victoria, we'll be getting to catch him.
Yeah. So when you finish the race, this probably isn't quite a good question. In adventure racing, I always like to ask people, you know, because it's nonstop and they may only sleep like 3 hours in a 4-day race. But I always ask, what do you want to do, sleep or eat? So when you guys finished, what are you ready for, sleeping or eating?
Both.
Yeah.
I think it is a bit different, because part of it is the sort of winding down from always being, you know, having to be on your game when you're paddling, and, you know, even going to shore and just being aware of potential issues with wildlife and looking for water all the time. So I think it's just that kind of like you can just like relax. So
yeah, I would say, I mean, again, it's a little bit of difference depending on the mode you're taking. I mean, I one in the year I was on a, you know, a pretty competitive sailboat, and where we just went like 24/7, like, you know, we did stop actually for a few hours for weather once, but and so sleep deprivation was, so I, at the end of that race, I just wanted to sleep, you know, like tie the boat up and I'm in the bunk, and whereas paddling, you know, I think we actually slept pretty well. I mean, physically we were very tired, but, you know, we got a pretty good sleep most nights, maybe not the last night, because we paddled 16 hours, but so yeah, the food, I think we actually did go to and have a big greasy burger at 10:30. That was what I was really looking forward to, actually, is the big greasy
burger. I think I was looking forward to a shower.
There's that. So what do you do for food? Is it, I mean, obviously you got some room to carry stuff. So is it basically, do you eat real food or mm-hmm. do you have a secret recipe you use?
Yeah, we have a special goop. No, I spent a lot of time dehydrating food. Mm-hmm. So we take some commercially prepared food as well, but try and do our own, and just lots of high caloric food like nuts yeah. and fatty sausages. And yeah, so definitely real food. We have talked about, you know, what can we do this year to minimize the time spent on shore cooking and getting ready, and kind of like, should we go like Carl and eat, you know, his energy tablets? But I don't think I could tolerate that for two and a half weeks. So
yeah, I think you need real food.
Yeah.
Other than, you know, at the end of the stage one, are there places, is there some little burger joint on the ocean where you can stop and get something to eat? Or
yeah, as far as Campbell River, yeah, you could easily, there's lots of places that you could
like
yeah. do that. Yeah.
But well, maybe can you call ahead and have them have some food waiting on the dock for you, and you just paddle by and grab it?
Yeah, we could. I think the first year the Soggy Beavers did that. They ordered pizza and had it delivered to the dock.
Yeah, actually, in the first year, we were up in a place called Alert Bay. This is on the sailboat, and we were just treated like celebrities. You know, this fellow came down and he'd been watching
the tracker
and seeing he saw us pull into Alert Bay, and so he leapt into his truck and he came down and was yelling at us from the dock, and he had two shopping bags and he gave us these fresh sockeye salmon steaks and fresh deer stew that he made, and we had this great feast. I mean, that was actually that was one of the highlights of that year. It's just this fellow and his 9-year-old just welcoming us to the community. It was really special.
Yeah, well, and that's, I think that's what makes doing it as a race special, is the people like that you run into on that. Yeah. So how many hours a day are you spending on the race right now? It's what, basically 3 months away?
How much time are we spending on the race?
like training or just thinking about it?
Training or thinking or working on the boat, or, you know. And I know it's probably not quite 24 hours a day, but it's probably close to that, huh?
I'm sure I'm dreaming about it. I've been having some wild dreams lately.
Yeah.
But I retired in mid-February, and until then I was just so busy with work that, you know, I was squeezing in my workouts when I could, but for me, the past 6 weeks has just been spending more time getting back in better physical condition. And starting to prep up for the race, like, okay, what gear do we need to replace? What gear do we need? You know, what are we going to do for food? What about our route? So just, it's hard to quantify it in terms of an actual time, because it'll depend.
Yeah, we had 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
we had a little, just this past weekend, we had a four or five day little training camp, you know, out of town, where we put in some pretty good miles in the kayak, and also got the canoe out. We tend to actually, you know, even though we're going to be, you know, probably 90% sure we're going to kayak this year, we tend to do a lot of different sports. So the swimming, that we're part of a master's group, you know, pretty vigorous cardio. Yep. As our base, and then we also just paddle a open canoe, and then, you know, we're rowing as well. So it's not all paddling.
A little bit of weightlifting, weight training, some hiking,
yeah,
cycling.
Yeah. We find that, you know, being older, right? We're both in our 60s, and so just that recovery after a long day, you know, you just don't. It's not the same as when we were in our 30s.
Yeah.
So really trying to build up some of those joints and, you know, shoulder joints and that.
Yeah. It's funny because you guys are describing my my wife's life exactly. She uses her swimming, master swimmer. I mean, that's her aerobic base. That's, you know, but, you know, she runs and cycles and, you know, mm-hmm. it does everything. But that swimming is where her, you know, aerobic base is, because you can do it in an hour and it doesn't tear you up. But that, yeah, then just does everything else. It's like I'm talking to her when you describe your workouts. Pretty funny.
Yeah. And you can do fairly high intensity, vigorous workouts without, you know, breaking anything. Like, I used to do a lot of running, but, you know, I just can't do that anymore without, that kind of chronic injuries. But swimming, we both spend a lot of time in the pool.
Yeah. Well, and I've found over the years, I would rather go for a 3-hour hike than a 30-minute run. So you just get to be out longer than that. So, yeah. So thinking and planning about the race, is there a map of something in your sight right now where you're sitting? Can you see a map? Because everybody I know has maps everywhere in the house.
Yeah, if we turn around.
a chart of the race course, or just sort of mapping?
No, or just a map. You say, oh, maybe you just have a map out and you look at it every day. Think, maybe we should go here.
I have one on my wall that I look at every day that has charted the routes that I've done in Sistership and in our rowboat and our kayak. So looking at the different routes of the coast.
And that is the one, very cool feature of this race, right? Is that there's a couple of waypoints. I mean, there's actually only one waypoint.
Two,
I guess, if you include Victoria, but
yeah.
But you can, other than those waypoints, you can take any route that you want. And so it's going to be different depending on the kind of boat you have and the experience as well. So we are thinking of, maybe we should take a little bit different route. There's we could go a bit more on the outside. It's maybe a little riskier weather-wise, but more scenic, about the same distance. So
good. You guys have been good adventurers. You got the maps out. That's all that matters. So do you know, you said you're probably going to kayak, but you're not sure yet? Are you still kind of deciding on the boat?
He wants to do something different, but.
No, I would say it's like pretty, it's kind of 90% going to be paddling. But I think if we, you know, say if we did have some sort of injury, we have a small little 20-foot sailboat, like a row that rows quite well. And so that would probably get us there in like, 9 or 10 days. That's maybe a backup if for some reason we got injured to the point where we weren't able to paddle. Yeah. But Janice likes there is something about being at the back of the fleet. You know, I've been in the closer to the front in the trimaran 1 year, and but the people at the back of the fleet, I think they have more fun. You know, there's more pain and suffering.
And I think for me also, there's this sort of feeling of needing to redeem ourselves from not getting there in 2019. And I know we've kayaked it, but it's kind of like, I don't want to leave with having not made it in the kayak again. So there's that for me. And also the other fact is that we are getting older, and I'm not sure how many more years we could actually human power our way up the coast in a race. So there's that part of it too, because I figure, we can always sail it again later, some other year.
That's true. So do you guys have any, other races that you, I'll just say it, you have anything else on your bucket list?
Oh yeah. Let's see, I'd like to get Ian to do the Yukon River Quest, and there's some canoe races that I think would be kind of interesting to do in Ontario. And I have a dream of cycling across Canada on the Trans-Canada Trail. And Ian has a dream of.
Yeah, maybe the Great Divide. I'd kind of like to do the North-South.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, I don't think it's a, I guess there's the race. I'm, you know, less interested in the race, but just doing the route, just doing that route.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, do the grand depart thing and then just wave bye-bye to everybody else and ride it at your own pace.
Yeah. I think Janice wants to row the Atlantic at some point too. I don't know about how that titanium hip would like that, but we have talked about that as well.
Well, bizarrely enough, for somebody that doesn't like water, I have some friends that are, I think, doing it this year.
Really?
Rowing the Atlantic, yeah.
Good for them. Are they doing it as part of a race?
Yeah, I think. I don't keep up with them very much, other than they did a 72-hour marathon on ERGs a few months ago. That looked really miserable.
Yeah, it's much easier to row in a boat on the water than it is to erg. I have an erg on my back deck, so I use it quite a bit, but I have a hard time getting up to even an hour on it at one time.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you're not in a dank, dark room either. Being outside probably helps a little bit, so.
Definitely.
So we'll wrap this up here because you guys have been real, real generous with your time, but other than getting to the finish and ringing the bell, what makes the race a success for you guys?
I'll answer. And as I said, I finished it four times. And in the first year, it was the first year of the race. And we actually, this is another story, but we had some very serious kind of crew conflict, and I ended up being kind of the mediator, and we resolved those differences. It took us about a day and a half, and we got to the finish line, and we were all, you know, the best of friends. We were all on the same page, and so, you know, just that the gelling of this team through that process. And we didn't, I mean, two of us knew each other quite well, but the third person didn't. And that was the most satisfying thing about that race, is that it would have been so easy to just abandon it. And in fact, you know, two of the people wanted to do that. And then with Janice, I think, you know, similarly, like, I think it's a real accomplishment to go through an event like that over 2 to 3 weeks and come out the other side and just be stronger relationship wise, and actually to be able to sort of share this incredible coastline that we have, you know, just it's. So being able to share that. I mean, we talk about doing it solo, but actually to be able to sort of share that experience with somebody, I think makes it really successful for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Like I was a single parent for a number of years and did a lot of training in my rowing in a single, so a lot of solo based activities. And so for me, it's much more enjoyable to have someone to share the experience with. And yeah, I think Ian and I know that we can get there because we've done it. And we know that we've survived our relationship and the challenges of being close proximity for such a, you know, compressed, extended period of time.
Yeah.
But, I think it's helped me to learn to appreciate the differences that people bring to different certain situations. And, you know, there's been times when I think we were probably both really frustrated with each other, but recognizing that we both have the same end goal and there's different ways of doing things to get there. And so just, you know, learning from that experience. But I think one thing I would like to do, and I think we've talked about this too, is just trying to get there in a more quick way, get there more quickly. And maybe have a bit more consistency in our days, because we had some days where we only paddled about 15 miles, and then in the kayak there was one day we paddled 63 mile, nautical miles. So yeah. trying to keep it more consistent and hopefully allow us to get there, you know, faster than we did in 2018.
And it'll be an interesting year because, so far there's one other paddler. There's a fellow from the UK, Bob McCall, is going to be coming over for it. And then there's two rowboats, double rowboats, a couple of teams of women that are going to be rowing it this year. So, you know, it's nice to sort of see that fully human powered complement of racers. There's just that real camaraderie. Yeah.
And I think we'd like to beat the rowers.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go. Yeah. But comes out. I do eventually.
Yeah. They're about half our age.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but you have treachery on your side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, very cool. So expect to hear from me after the race, because I think I should check back with you afterwards and we can talk about it. Cause
sure.
I'm going to be watching, but I want to know what it's like from your point of view. So
yeah, it's always fun to talk about the race.
I know. I agree. It's fun to hear about it too, from the horse's mouth, so to speak. So, all right. Well, I'm going to let you guys go, cause you should probably go do a training session or something.
Yeah, we should.
Or study the maps. Yeah. All right, study the maps.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Randy.
Thank you. Nice to chat with you.
Thank you. It's been great. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Take care.
Talk again soon.
Right. Bye.
All right. Bye.